Pheasant.
Pheasant.
Little James Pheasant.
Is that James?
Little James Pheasant.
James and the Giant Peach.
He was like, right, and Chris holds his fucking microphone like he's Mick Jagger.
Fucking hell. Oh, I feel like Mick Jagger.
The old haggard version.
Drunk and overweight. I get out of breath just by fucking lounging and talking to you and drinking Peroni.
Yeah, but that's only because you're exchanging intelligence with somebody and ending up with a deficit.
Welcome to What's in the Box, this show about intelligent people making intelligent decisions and fighting mutant space bears, and literally nothing else. Should we take a look inside the box this week? Let's have a look what's in the box this week. Ooh. It's Indiana Jones.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
It's Indiana Jones.
Did you know that Spielberg has confirmed production of Indiana Jones, the next one, what is that, five? Six?
Five.
Will start next year. It's Spielberg, it's Indiana Jones, it's huge news, mate. Who's going to play Indiana Jones?
Obviously Harrison Ford.
Fuck off, mate. He's not...
He's doing his old man run that you love.
You can't run anymore. He's got his little arms tucked in. Who would you like to play Indiana Jones?
I don't want anyone else to play Indiana Jones. I don't want anyone else to play Han Solo, but Disney are making me eat it. So if it's got to be anybody, it should be that same dude. So he's not actually playing... He's not playing Han Solo. He's actually playing Harrison Ford.
Yes. It's just following Harrison Ford's career and all the remakes.
Because he's doing pretty well so far. So we'll see that. We'll see Sabrina. We'll see Sabrina. Quietly Regarding Henry's six days
What's
and seven
Amish
nights.
One? What's the Amish one? Ah,
what is the Amish one? Yeah. I don't know, but we'll see that. So, other Harrison Ford movies.
What's his name? I want to say Ansel Elgort.
It's Aaron Elgort.
No, it's not. It's like Aaron Eckhart.
No, that's.
Is it like?
He was in Thank You for Smoking and was also Two Face.
Okay.
It's Aaron Eckhart. We know the dude. The dude who's already playing Harrison Ford.
Yes. Who is that?
We're both in the same ballpark. Like, it begins with an A, and then there's an E for the search. So it's Alan. Alan. It's basically nothing's happened this week.
Fucking hell,
We basically did all the news on the last episode. Like, everything just happened in that one week. I mean, there was the thing I read today about Robin Williams that really, really upset me. What? It was the worst, like, headline I've seen. It was like, Robin Williams used to fondle my breasts, and I was like, oh no, not him too. I mean, I know he's gone, but please don't. No. And it was from the lady who was in Mork and Mindy with him. I forget the actress's name now.
Mindy.
And then when you actually clicked on it, the follow-up was, he used to fondle my breasts, and it was hilarious.
And it was absolutely fine.
But it was just talking about all the antics that he used to get up to on Mork and Mindy, basically because he was either bored or because he was Robin Williams.
Wow.
And he just sounded amazing.
Really?
Well, like, when they were doing, like, her coverage and stuff like that, he'd start taking off his clothes and try and get naked to distract her.
Because that's inappropriate again, isn't it?
That is inappropriate, but it's okay because it's funny.
He's part of the problem. I'm glad he's dead.
And he talked about some 70-year-old woman who he goosed.
Goosed?
And
I was like, what?
Goosing?
Yes. I like when you have to sit me down and teach me about things.
Goosing is getting the end of a brush or a mop
and
quickly jabbing it up in between the buttocks of an unsuspecting person because it makes them stand to attention and goose.
So, mate, that's not what goose looks like, mate.
But it's more penguining, but penguining doesn't roll off the tongue.
What? So Robin Williams will go around goosing Mindy?
No, he would goose anyone that walked past him in the corridor.
Jesus, see, again, that is inappropriate.
It's funny.
No, it's not funny, mate. Fucking hell, I'm glad he is dead. Can't say that about Robin Williams.
Stop saying it.
Oh, he got a bit tedious, though, didn't he, after a while?
No.
Yes, he did, mate.
Fuck off. You can't say this because it's not true.
Oh, it is, though, isn't it?
At what point did he get
tedious? Doing it again, and he's doing it. Stop. Here he comes, he's doing it. Wait for it. Oh, there's some more Marvel shit as well in the news.
Why are you hurting? You're not hurting this much about Marvel. There's good Marvel stuff. Infinity Wars is coming up, and it's had that amazing... They've given the quote about the best crossover ever.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
The internet stuff that's been generated off that has been amazing. Yeah. And it was won today. It was won by somebody who'd got a Toblerone and they'd laid chocolate orange bits in between the ridges of the Toblerone as the most ambitious crossover ever. I was like, you've just won the internet,
okay,
my friend.
Right, okay. So they released the running time of this, of the next film. The Infinity War.
You mean there's no running? Is it just forever?
No, it's 2.5 hours, mate.
They're all 2.5 hours.
No, they are not.
Yes, they are. We've just, they are not. Mish and I have just sat down and watched all of them. Yeah. We've just watched all of them. Yeah, we have.
You don't need to see them more than once, mate.
We've just watched them all in order. We watched the Hulk last night.
What, with Ang Lee's Hulk?
No.
I love Ang Lee's Hulk so much. There's this awful bit where he's like, you know the bit where he's in the desert? And it's shot from so far away, and such like it's a massive wide shot. And he's so far away, and there's this little piddly little Hulk. And he's like bouncing around like, it looks awful, and it is.
It does look so bad.
Oh, you're talking about Edward Norton's
I'm talking
Hulk.
About Edward Norton, the one that everyone's forgotten about, and it's actually really good in places.
No, it's not, yes, but I know what you mean. Don't you wish that it was still Edward Norton in all this shit?
No.
Rather than, name?
I think the juxtaposition
Thinking
of
Man's Heart from Mark Ruffalo. Yeah.
I think the juxtaposition of Mark Ruffalo's soft the character... Rough.
Yes.
Versus the Hulk is really interesting. We were commenting last night on how different he looked from like his role in American History X, where he was huge. And that worked. Like, he looks like a scientist in that film. Do you know, or your stereotypical impression of a scientist.
Yeah.
And that worked with all of them, but he just doesn't seem as sympathetic.
I mean, he's just doing the same character, isn't he? He's doing Edward Norton from Fight Club. The boring version. That was
but
about
it's
it.
Also the only Marvel.
Is Tim Roth in that?
Tim Roth's great. Tim Roth's in it. It's also the only Marvel film that's actually got a soundtrack that you could remember.
Has it?
Well, with the exception of The Avengers, can you remember any theme tune from any Marvel film?
Yeah, of course I can. That's Batman, isn't it? So I went to see. What was it called? The Incredible Hulk or The Hulk? I went to see that at the IMAX in London's Waterloo IMAX. And it was a fucking massive con because it was a normal screen size projection on the IMAX screen, which meant there was more black space than the fucking Milky Way. With a tiny little screen in the middle, like, what is this? Can you fucking imagine that? Why have I fucking gone to the IMAX? Why am I in fucking Waterloo, which is miles away from anywhere, over a bridge? Like, just to see a normal screen, just to see a regular projection, like a standard size screen. Why am I in a fucking room the size of space watching this shit?
Does the IMAX regularly put on SD movies?
Yes, it's SD tiny piss-tay movies. Yeah, I think it does. Absolute scum. And the film was average anyway. But it had one of the first... Was that the second post-credits scene?
Yes.
After Iron Man 1?
Yeah. And Tony Stark walks in and talks to...
General Stryker from X-Men. Two and a half hours is long. No, it is not, mate.
Winter Soldier's that long.
No, nothing has been longer than... I can't remember what they said.
Captain America Civil War, 2 hours, 27 minutes.
Yeah. That's Civil War, which is the longest so far, with and another ensemble piece, right?
I'm all for it. I think it's going to be great.
No, it's not going to be great. But that's anyway, do you know the reason the why it's that long?
Why is it that long, Chris?
Because loads of people are going to die.
Of course they are, and it's going to be amazing.
I think because you can't kill a major character, and they're all major characters now, aren't they? You can't kill a major character and then just go, oh, he's dead, right, move on. You got to devote some screen time to that so like the film sort of slows down or whatever. I reckon we're talking about 10 minutes per death. Minimum two deaths, 20 minutes so of that, the next...
Just extra death.
It's extra death. 20 minutes of Marvel's Infinity War film devoted to death.
I think that's acceptable.
Yeah, I think it is as well. I think that's good math. It's good logic. Well done, Chris. Gold star.
I think Captain America's going first.
Shut all the doors in the known universe.
He's going to go first. He's going to saving somebody. That's saving somebody.
He's probably going to try and save the Hulk.
I mean, he's going to die. He's not going to be found hanging in the closet dying from a fatal wanking accident.
With a belt around his neck. And an orange in his mouth.
Just trying to swallow his own shield.
Why is this, what's this bit of rope attached to this door? Oh,
leave
my
it.
God. he looks so happy. Maybe I should leave him.
Quick, take the orange out of his mouth. Why? Because it just looks silly.
It's ridiculous. Man, some dignity. So, okay.
Cap's going first, followed by Iron Man. Iron Man's going to die in the last act. That's what I reckon.
What?
Downey Jr.'s out.
That's big.
It's huge.
That is huge, isn't it?
But those are two actors.
It'd be actually worth pointing up with that fucking running time for that.
Two actors who've spent the last month talking about all the exciting projects they're going to be doing.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, why can't they get rid of all the boring, like, waste of time characters instead?
Like Hulk.
The Hulk character is the worst character in this, bar Black Widow and Jeremy Renner. But Hulk does nothing. He just bounces around and, like, no one cares. He can't be killed. He's invincible. He bounces off. And then Marvel's way of killing him is just to push him out of the frame.
Push him out of the universe into another universe.
Like a pinball. Like, they just bounce him off around the other side of the world. And it's like, oh, that's convenient.
The Hulk was so powerful. He jumped out of the fourth wall.
He did. It's a comic book. I'm doing a comic book. Like, these little frames appear. Oh, come on, Aang. We get it. I don't know if I'm excited for this film. I sort of am, because I don't think I've seen anything with this amount of intertextuality in it at one time. It's like a Stephen King novel.
But you are excited for it. You just know exactly already all the emotions you're going to feel before
you go into it. Yeah, it's like, let's paint by numbers. Woo! Yeah. Incredible. Vanilla, isn't it?
It is, but they're fun. They are
fucking vanilla, mate.
They are, but having just rewatched them all, what's been really cool is seeing all the references peppered about the different films and seeing it all joined together again in ways that we'd totally forgotten.
Yeah.
Like Wakanda's referenced quite far back.
Is it?
You know, it's in Age of Ultron, so at least 5 years ago.
It's kind of a shame that this Fox deal won't have gone through. Well, obviously they've wrapped all this, but it's all done, but because then what you would have got is Disney buying Fox, Disney owning Marvel. What you would have got is a post-credits Wolverine scene.
But who's going to be Wolverine now?
I thought it was that British actor who was in The Hobbit. Well, one of the
Martin Freeman.
Yeah, it's going to be Martin Freeman, mate. Who's the head dwarf? Oh, I don't fucking know.
Oh, Richard Armitage.
Something like that.
I could see that working.
Yeah, why not? Fuck it, reboot it.
What? Let's talk about Annihilation. We nearly watched this simultaneously.
Hey, mate, look, you were really excited about Annihilation.
Oh, I was so excited. Do you know why I was excited? Apart from the fact that it was Alex Garland who wrote The Beach, 28 Days Later, Sunshine, best teamed up with Danny Boyle. They were a great pairing. But then went off, did his own stuff, did Ex Machina.
Like, Dread.
Did Dread. I forgot Dread.
Yes.
Dread's good.
Dread's really good.
Dread also
Love Dread.
Also coined the term Hard 18. Everyone started talking about it. It's like, not only was it an 18, because we hadn't seen one at the cinema for fucking years.
I know, yeah. Like, everything's it wasn't just only, like it wasn't merged only... into like a difficult 15 again.
It's like, well, it should be an 18, but we'll get more money if we make it. Yeah,
yeah. Flattened out into like just a queue of teenagers. Like, oh, for fuck's sake.
PG-13, ooh. But yeah, everyone's like, no, it's not an 18, it's a hard 18. I mean, it's fucked
yes,
up.
I know, it's great.
So he did Dread as well, and then went on to more cerebral stuff like Ex Machina. Or
careful, mate.
Interviews with a Robot.
I thought, yeah, so...
People rate it, but like, that's
yeah,
not...
Oh,
like,
yeah, but people... Like, what winds me up is that people really rate it, as in like genius level. It's like calm down a bit. It's all right.
Yeah,
it's got. What was that terrible film that you showed me a couple of years ago, which is the same as Ex Machina? Is it called AI, with that British guy who was a Bond villain?
The Machine.
Yes,
that was getting rave reviews everywhere, and yes. I was like, we've got to go and see this. And we went and watched it, and it was trash.
It was awful, wasn't it?
We tapped out within the first. Touch screens have been out. How long have touch screens been out for? Maybe about a year or so, like an iPhone. No, maybe a bit longer than that.
No, mate, this was 2015.
All right, fuck this. So in one of the first scenes, somebody gets shot and blood spurts all over their workstation. And they actually had a voice come over like, warning, liquid contamination, cannot use touchscreen interface. And at that point, we're like, really? We're in a sci-fi film, you need to explain that for people?
Yeah, because he's grasping at the touchscreen to like shut down something because there's blood on it doesn't respond. But you just have to show that, don't you? You just have to show it not responding. Like we've all like a voiceover.
We've all been out in the rain and realised that it makes your phone go fucking crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's when you watch that before watching Ex Machina, you're like, this rings a bell.
I hadn't compared the two.
And that's all I could see watching that film, mate, was like, oh, this reminds me of that fucking gash.
Can you imagine Alex Garland sitting there and we're like, this is shit, I can do this way better. You talk about all the stuff with the touring test. I hadn't seen that.
It's a ten a penny, those scenes. Like, it's ripped off of Blade Runner for a start. So the Blade Runner scene is the
boring
start,
Blade
isn't
Runner
it?
Scene. I'm throwing it in.
It's not boring.
So boring.
Oh, Secret Cinema update, mate. I'm still fed up. It's getting closer. My new tactic to get through Blade Runner Secret Cinema is to get really, really tanked up beforehand. And so I actually lose myself in that world, which is perfect because in that world, in the future, in Los Angeles 2049 or wherever the fuck it is, I would not go and see Blade Runner at the cinema. I would just hang around noodle bars and maybe a strip show. Not a strip show. Oh, shit. Alex. Oh, you tricked me. You tricked me again. Oh, you're clever. Do you know what happened this morning?
No, because I wasn't in the bathtub with you.
I was in the bathtub and I thought about Secret Cinema.
And your dick shriveled up and just crawled up inside yourself.
I started to physically lactate.
Your brother listens to this show every week. And every week all you do is rip on the fact that he bought you this wonderful present.
Yeah. No, he owes me this. He's still paying me back some money that he owes me, the scumbag. Anyway, so I thought about, oh God, I've got to go to Blade Runner. I've got to watch Blade Runner again. And I don't think I can do it. I genuinely think I cannot. I can't cope with pure wall-to-wall boredom.
Please do this for me. Wherever you're actually, the actual screening part of the evening is, will be fabulous.
No, it will.
The actual location will be fabulous. Wherever it's going to be in the warehouse. What I want you to do, please, is wait till the lights go down and stand up and really loudly go, "Don't like Blade Runner."
Blade Runner. Oh, boo, boring. It's like my trench coat, like wafting as I fuck off. I've got this mental block about this experience. Shit's gonna get serious. So I'd rather just get absolutely smashed and forget where I am, who's in charge, and what year it is.
You might wake up like on the floor, covered in your own filth, thinking you're in the future. Did I black out to 2018 again? Shit. Shit.
I'm still in Blade Runner. It's a Black Mirror episode where Chris goes to see Blade Runner and realises that he is in Blade Runner all the time and the real world's a dream.
But let's go back to Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. Overrated. Next.
So when I found out he was doing a new film that was coming to Netflix, didn't even have to go to the cinema to see it. Yep. Could have been a warning sign. I was dead excited, but it was sold to me on an article I think I read in The Guardian. It was talking about the fact that it was all female cast, which was interesting straight away. So we just had Ghostbusters and what a crock that was.
I haven't seen
and
it.
What I didn't think this would be. And it said it sold it as a horror film with smart people making smart decisions, but shit's still going wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, that sounds interesting.
Yes, that does sound interesting.
That's not what we saw, though, was it? Very simply, plot. In the worst special effects I've ever seen.
Spoilers.
Since Ray Harryhausen.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. A meteorite.
I like saying spoilers.
Hits a lighthouse.
Oh, yeah.
And causes a petrol-y shimmer.
A
petrol-y, looks like petrol, doesn't it?
Oh, sorry, yeah, petrol-y, like an iridescent looking.
Thank you, that's
shimmer.
A word that.
Petrol-y yeah, is fine.
I just took a word that I knew in another one and slammed them together.
Petrol-y shimmer. No, yeah. That's in the original
like
script, it's that bad.
It's like how I speak Czech. Just add ski to the end of everything. Right. It does work, ski.
Okay, yeah, sometimes it works. So it creates this sort of like iridescent shimmer. They call it the shimmer.
Ooh, iridescent.
On this sort of around this location, which is
a national park, isn't it?
Oh yeah, that's it, like a national park or something like that.
And the people that go into it go missing.
But Natalie Portman, her husband, played by Oscar Isaacs, goes missing for a year. He turns up unexpected. She thinks he's dead. He's acting all creepy and weird. He's got slicked back hair, which is weird.
It is weird.
And they take him in an ambulance because he starts having convulsions. She's in the ambulance as well. The ambulance gets stopped by the ambulance gets stopped by a lot of gangsters or police, and they take them both to a facility.
Where she badly narrates things.
A bunch of girls get together and they go into this event, and then shit starts happening.
With a really twangy guitar. So that was my first, like, ooh. There's a few moments where you kind of start thinking, all right, this isn't going exactly where I was thinking it was going, when you've got a bunch of people walking into a scary forest with happy guitar music playing, like guitar music that's better suited to like a corporate video about somebody's new coffee beans.
So anyway, the four or five characters go in and they start seeing weird things. One scene, they wake up in the first morning, right? Natalie Portman's character, you start in her tent and she wakes up and she steps outside and the other tents and the girls are around her. And she has a conversation with another character and the other character's like, do you not know how long we've been out here? And Natalie Portman's character's like, we just got here, didn't we? Like, I just woke up. We've been here literally less than a day. She's like, no, we've been here at least a couple of days. And I thought, ooh, that's quite unsettling. And I thought that the film was going to, you know, explore that in more detail, which is quite scary. Then you've got a whole host of things you can play with, like disorientation, mm-hmm. unreliable narrators, unreliable characters. And I thought, that's actually quite scary, because it was billed to me as a horror film.
Yeah,
me too. And I was waiting for the horror to start.
Also, it was a really simple thing to do, but I loved the fact that it wasn't her keeping it to herself. It wasn't her, like, she had a problem, she was feeling a bit weird, she wanted to keep it from everyone else. It was straight away like, is everyone feeling this way? Yes. Okay. Right, we know this is a thing. I like the fact that it came out and addressed it, and it made me think, okay, this is the intelligent people making smart decisions. Wait, because it's followed up almost immediately after that by one of them dicking around with their communication equipment, and the leader, Jennifer Jason Leigh, cuts her off straight away and says, we've sent in six teams, and we're not heard from anybody. What were you expecting? And again, I was like, okay, This is promising. There was a dodgy music thing earlier, but this is promising.
But what happens is, it's not intelligent people making intelligent decisions. It's the usual intelligent people, because they're scientists, just doing the same shit that everyone else in horror films does. So they just go into like an empty house and come out again and then die because they've done that.
There's a huge high watchtower near a military base that they could stay in, but instead they camp on the floor.
Do you know what I mean? And one of them gets attacked by a bear. For the middle part of the movie, for the majority of it, most of the second act, you just kind of get standard horror.
There's bits which have been ripped from a Hannibal episode where all the moss and algae have grown out of the people.
Yeah,
that's fresh out of a Hannibal episode.
And I was so disappointed at that. So there's a scene where they, in these abandoned like swimming pool area during the day, when they come across a previous like member of the expedition who's been mutated and turned into like moss and a sort of plant, and there's a skull at the top, which is quite horrific. This is something that I noticed throughout and started to play on my mind was Alex Garland's direction. And for me, it was like, could have done so much more with that. It's almost akin to the reveal in Aliens, when you start seeing the alien hive and the cam footage of the Marines, and people are like, what is that? Can you like pull back a bit? Like, look, what is that again? And they're showing those unnatural walls. And then it cuts to a wide and it pans up slowly. It's like, wow, what the fuck is this? That's like, James Cameron is a master. Like, he understands visual storytelling so much better than Garland, who just kind of shoots it from the side in natural light and stuff like that.
It's shot in exactly the same way as Ex Machina. Whereas it works for Interviews with a Robot, it doesn't work for this, because you need action beats and cutting and something to actually emphasize what's happening. The closest thing we came to seeing heightened action was when the girl gets pulled into the water.
Yeah.
I mean, there's about three cuts in that sequence just about. I'm not saying you have to cut, but you've got to use the camera to accent what's happening. It lacks kinesis.
The overriding feeling for me watching this film was, fuck me, I just want to see something by David Fincher. What I actually did after watching this was YouTube all of the fight scenes from Troy. They are masterful. I wanted to watch the work of a seasoned director, not the work of a screenwriter who's asking a cinematographer what to do next. Like, Spielberg does so well. It just made me crave to watch like a fucking classic director like Spielberg or Fincher.
There's one or two moments that are absolute genius. Like the bear.
Yeah, that was class.
This bear that they come across is mutated into its ability to copy what people are saying. And we're not talking like a talking bear. It's not suddenly Baloo. It's not Baloo.
It sort of is Baloo.
It repeats the odd phrase. It's kind of reminiscent of Predator in a way.
Yeah, yeah, it
but
is.
But it's just subtle.
Yeah, that's where he ripped it off.
The bear's lips aren't moving. It's like, Ooby-Doo, I want to be like you. But it's on the inhale, isn't it? you hear the scream and the whines.
That was a really, really good little set piece, wasn't it? Because they're all tied up and they hear a dead character screaming, like, and they're like, "What the fuck? I thought they were dead." And then you find out that it's coming from this, like, this evil bear witch.
And then it gets minced as well. It gets shot sideways on. That was pretty horrific as well.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
Oh, man. It's just, but do you know what? That's what I'm talking about. That scene, the way it was framed, was really sort of flat. It's basically the T-Rex scene from Jurassic Park when they're in the cars, when the monster is super close and it's sort of circling its prey. Imagine Spielberg shooting that scene. It would look totally different. The camera would be moving so much more and it'd be a lot more frightening. And that's what I missed so much from Alex Garland's direction.
Got to give one nod to the end as well. The actual creation, when she crawls into like the alien hive layer thing.
Yeah.
And there's the moment of actual creation with that.
It felt like it was a tacked on 2001 reference to make the story look clever.
I'm glad you've mentioned 2001 because I think this whole film is like sci-fi genius in the same way that 2001 is in Tchaikovsky's Solaris, i.e. fucking boring.
Stop hating on those classic films. 2001's good.
2001's awful. 2001's those films so much. Awful.
It's not. It's brilliant.
Is it though?
I don't think this blobby thing. This is similar to Arrival, right? Which you've seen as well. And you didn't like, did you?
I appreciate why it's good. I think it's truly original, but it just wasn't for me.
But the point is, that is a film about intelligent characters making intelligent decisions, because they are scientists and they are translating something which is untranslatable into something meaningful, right? So that's it. There's an example of what intelligence on screen should look like. So that's what I was kind of hoping for in this as well, but I didn't get that at all. And also, the end of Arrival compared to the end of Annihilation. Two films include these huge alien-style events. In Arrival, huge UFOs appear across the world, which is ripped off Independence Day, which is ripped off
V.
Ripped off V, which is ripped off Childhood's End by Arthur C. Clarke.
Ripped off War of the Worlds by H.G.
Exactly, yes. Hey, we complete the loop. However, one of them, Arrival, feels a lot more global in scale. These alien things arrive. They act as a kind of black mirror to humanity. They do nothing, and humanity nearly tears itself apart. So nuclear war nearly happens and has to be averted at the last moment in the last sort of 20 minutes. And all these aliens do is sit there and do fuck all. And humanity can't cope with that. It can't cope with that reticence. So it starts to fucking draw tanks on the lawn, right? So it feels global, even though the actions are very simple and the story is quite a simple story. Whereas in Annihilation, it feels a lot smaller in scale and a lot more kind of local.
The idea is that nobody knows about the Shimmer. They've kept it secret. It's only a couple of miles wide, etc. But yeah, it doesn't have that scale.
Yeah, and then therefore it doesn't have as much resonance as a film. Like, it just feels like a little small event.
I don't think that's fair. I think it can be a small event and still be significant. I think the problem is that you don't connect with anybody in the film at all. I think what was interesting was straight away you get the hint that Natalie Portman isn't a reliable narrator.
When did you know that?
It's in the first interview. I just got a feeling that, because they were quite boring as well. It was a horrible stop. Every so often, like, oh, we've got to stop to go back to this scene now to listen to her talk. But then it's compounded by the fact that when you found out that she had an affair with the other teacher, it's like, right, now I know she's lying, right? Because I know she's morally questionable.
The present day timeline is Natalie Portman being interrogated, i.e. what happened to you? And let me tell you, and my heart sinks when I watch narratives that are structured that way. You know, when you get like an intro scene and then the screen goes dark and it says 2 years earlier.
The first thing you think of when you see her is, oh fuck, I know she survives now, which was my first thought. And I mean, okay, obviously we realise that she doesn't survive, she's the copy, she's the alien. Therefore, sticking two fingers up to your first assumption, you know, that, oh, she survived. But it just wasn't interesting enough for me to go, oh, you got me.
Also, it became apparent that the flash forward scenes to the present day were literally a way of trying to avoid having a voiceover, because all those scenes did was provide a voiceover track. Like, what did you do next? What were you thinking? And she says, of course, she says shit like, of course, what I really meant was this. And it's like, that's just voiceover. And they wanted to try and you know, skirt around that, so they put flash forward scenes or flashbacks or whatever. So you lose that immediacy of a story, especially a horror film. If you're trying to tell a horror, I don't know if even if you wanted to tell a horror film, by the way, is this supposed to be a horror film or a sci-fi film with horror elements? I don't know. But if you're going to have horror elements in a film, then there's an amazingly efficient way of pulling the plug on all the tension and watching it drain away. That's what you do is you just flash forward to present day where the protagonist is still alive and well. Unless you want to, like, play with that, which I guess it kind of tried to do at the end by suggesting that she was a...
You just didn't give enough of a shit.
No, you didn't.
That was the thing. But, I mean, not everybody's thinking the same way. Like, there's people whose opinions I pretend to respect and other people whose opinions I do respect saying, like the events of The Thing, done with the ladies from The Descent, but goes into Stellar at the end with Poe Dameron, 4 out of 5.
That's good. Who said that?
That's from Kev.
Cheers, Kev. So, I don't know. I was quite disappointed by it.
I was disappointed. And not only was I disappointed, I was sorry that I'd recommended it to you, and I have to publicly apologise to Boz, because Boz was really upset.
Really? Fuck it, I enjoyed not paying cinema prices for this.
I'd have been pissed if I'd have had to leave the house and spent money to go and watch it. I would have been upset.
Did it change, like, your expectations of it or how you felt watching it by watching it at home compared to if you'd paid like money to see it at the cinema?
I only ask one question whenever I'm watching like anything on TV, which is please entertain me. That's all I really give a shit about. Like, people like always saying, oh god, it must be horrible for you, can't you just watch a film without analysing it? I'm like, yeah, all the time. In fact, I find it really difficult analysing stuff, because every time I sit down to just analyse it, I end up drifting off and getting lost in it. But so that isn't a problem for me. But yeah, I mean, had I parted with like 15 quid to see it, I'd have been more pissed off than I was.
Why can't someone make a film, Tristan, that's anywhere near as good as Event Horizon was? Should we watch it at your house?
That and Pandorum. Did we watch it at my house?
Of course we did, mate. Like, religiously. Why have you forgotten all that?
I've never forgotten.
Yeah, we'd play Privateer 2 The Darkening, and then we crack, with a bit of Event Horizon.
Then we made our own version of Privateer 2 The Darkening,
which was incredible.
It was incredible. Yes. Live blades. We must have been
I just
insane.
Fucking sold that. I had like an antique sword that we used and chipped the fuck out of it. I just sold it at Sotheby's like last month. 600 quid.
Nice.
I'll take that. So why can't people just release Event Horizon every year? And I can go and watch it again. It's never been better.
Did they rip that? Right, did they take the piss out of that in South Park? I think they did randomly with the left hand killer.
What?
He keeps going to Cartman. Do you see? He's like, oh my god, I'm so bored.
Was that New Event Horizon?
I wonder because they kept referencing
it. That's obscure as fuck. No, but the point of Annihilation is you're never going to make a film as good as Event Horizon. So why bother? I feel like I'm hungover. I've just woken up and it's a fucking Sunday. Nothing's going to happen today. I need something in my life. What could I possibly turn to cheer me up on a Sunday, mate?
Apart from Pornhub.
No, that's what I was talking about, Pornhub. So we're going to give you a list of films to watch now. All right, The Graduate. Absolute textbook, mate. I fucking associate that film with Sunday afternoon viewing. Have you seen it?
I haven't.
Mate.
I still actually haven't seen the original. So,
Dustin, mate, Hoffman.
To the point.
Oh, fuck, I can't watch any more Hoffman
no,
films.
No, you're not allowed to watch Hoffman and like
oh,
it.
Oh, that's another one gone.
You know in Wayne's World 2 where they do the rip-off of it?
Yes.
I didn't know.
No, you wouldn't have because you haven't seen it.
No, I was just like, what's this? Why are people laughing? I don't understand why this is funny.
What, the Cassandra?
Yeah.
Well, The Graduate's one, because it's I don't know, there's something about films of that era that's just really suited to afternoon viewing. Like, their last ages, they're shot mostly in the daytime, and they're great, they're really well written. So The Graduate's a fucking brilliant film. Definitely worth watching. If you haven't seen that, mate...
Well, it's going to go on my list now.
Yes, it is. Okay, add The Graduate to Tristan's watch list.
Done.
Okay, this is a list of classic films Tristan refuses to watch.
These are two very different lists, because I took this from a point of like, oh my God, I can't move. I just need some pretty colours and something to distract me.
Okay, yeah.
So my first film is Juice Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Are you fucking joking?
No, I'm not.
Juice Bigelow. What are you on about?
I'm on about Rob Schneider. Doopty, doopty, doop.
Oh my God.
Rob Schneider is absolute best. I got a thin dick! And other yeah. really...
What about Juice Bigelow starring Rob Schneider?
Rob Schneider. Medieval weapons, they're worth twice as much if they've killed someone.
The joke that has made me laugh out loud more than any other joke in cinema history whilst being in a fucking cinema watching a comedy was in Juice Bigelow Male Gigolo 2. Have you seen what do you mean you haven't seen that? There's they're in Amsterdam and there's this scene like he's at some, I don't know, it's like he's in the afternoon and Juice Bigelow goes to this house and it's like there's, I think it's like there's a porn director and he's the ruse is he has to like get some information off him, but they're shooting like some midget porn. And I'm pretty sure it's Peter Dinklage who's playing the midget in it. And he's like, he has a go at Juice Bigelow. And Juice Bigelow grabs him and then like chucks him out of the window. You know, Amsterdam's like full of canals and stuff like that. And he smashes through the window and he falls out through the frame into the canal. And the sound effect is like a tiny bloop. And it's so non-fucking PC these days.
I don't think it's going to be Peter Dinklage.
It's so non-PC.
I can't imagine him doing that. Don't make me he bitch man slap you. There's just so many fucking great... I love with the tank guy.
Ooh.
It's like, look, I'm not trying to flip you over and do you dry. Just squat on it for a night and let me know.
Stop. Don't look me in the eyes. Stop. Don't do it again.
Well, we went to the aquarium like last weekend and all I could think of was, hey, fishy, fishy, fishy. Hey, fishy. They don't really like that. Well, so, Juice Bigelow.
I can't remember any of the jokes from Juice Bigelow 1.
Piss face. I can't remember so many. Yeah, ball hair. What we need is a strike hair. Hey, what do you think of the other team? Horse!
I don't know what that is. I just remember the little midget joke.
Give me the next one. Give me your next one.
Fucking hell, you've set the bar, haven't you?
Raging Bull's going to be on this fucking list.
Yeah, The Searchers. John Ford Western, archetypal, gorgeous film.
Are these films that you'd actually watch, or are these films that you want other people to think that you watch?
No, I love
that. People go, no, I love 2001. It's my favourite movie.
Yeah, no,
of all
it's
time.
Not. It's not one of those wanky fucking virtue signalling type lists. This is like genuine films that I've watched, well, mainly at university. So every day is a fucking Sunday, isn't it? Like,
yes, it was.
I mean, you can devote hours of any fucking afternoon watching good films. The Searchers is a fucking amazing film. It inspired Star Wars. You love Star Wars. Why haven't you seen The Searchers? That's on the list, isn't it?
It's now, all right.
I mean, it's 3 hours
I'm
long,
corner,
so
I'm going to raise the bar a little bit with this one. Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade.
Oh, what a movie, mate.
Exactly. Do
what
you know
a
what I mean?
Movie.
Connery and Ford. Like, Connery's only 10 years older than him, but he's playing his dad.
I love that.
You've forgotten how good it is. Watch it. The timing is perfect. The stunts are real. They both shag the same girl.
I know.
It's so awkward.
That scene in like the Nazi castle bit is like note perfect, isn't it? It's great, like
Dad,
comedy.
What? Even crap jokes like people looking in the opposite direction like Dad,
yeah,
what? Dad, over the chair,
yeah,
brilliant.
I love that. That is fucking gold.
How did you know she was a Nazi? She talks in her sleep.
Oh, yes. What a movie. That's better than both of them that I suggested.
Watch it. If you haven't seen it in ages, put it on. You've forgotten how good it is.
American Werewolf in London, mate. Yes.
Oh,
John Landis. Oh, fucking Landis masterclass.
I'm not a fan.
You know
I'm
what?
Not a fan.
It's
that would
great.
Be, for me, that would be equivalent.
Rick Mayall's in it.
So, is he?
Mm-hmm.
I might watch it again just to try and see him.
It's a great balance between horror and then comedy. It's a note perfect film. It doesn't push either of those too far. It's just got this wonderful tone to it that's great to watch, especially when you're like either hungover or whatever.
I would say then that I probably miss the horror element.
What?
And the comedy. The thing I was always told to watch for was The Amazing Transformation, which in 1983 was incredible.
Like Stan Winston or something?
Not so much now.
Was it Stan Winston?
I don't know if it was Stan Winston.
Who's Sex Machine?
I don't know.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, Sex Machine. What's his name? Oh, yeah. Fight.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah,
I was
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Why is he stroking his penis?
No, I'm not sure. I'm wearing trousers.
Is he, though?
Yeah, there's those two, like, effects guys. Stan Winston from The Thing and Steve.
There are only
Albini
two effects guys. There are only two practical effects
that's
guys
my,
in Hollywood.
That's my next
oh,
film.
Oh, one, because he's dead. So that was your next film.
American
so
World
I'm going to stay in a sort of similar vein. Okay, I hear you. I disagree.
What? What do you mean disagree? You can't disagree. I'm giving you a list.
Okay, fine. Thanks, Chris. I'm not going to watch
it. Oh, fuck's sake.
My next one's kind of in the same vein, so I'm going to go with Back to the Future.
Back to the Future. Yeah, see, I can't watch that anymore.
What?
Bored.
Really?
Can't watch it anymore. I've watched it too many times.
I'm going to say it in a way that's not going to sell it to you even more. You need to watch it for the camera blocking.
Zemeckis level blocking.
No, there's the one scene you have to watch where they're in Emmett's house discussing the plan, the fact that Marty might not... discussing the...
Emmett's house?
Doc Emmett Brown.
Actually claiming you're on first name terms with the doc from Back to the Future.
I'm right. Well, you'd be on first name terms with Marty. Why would you not be on first name terms with Emmett?
Because no one calls him Emmett. You just see it like on a letter. It's the fucking doc. I cannot watch it any more times.
Wow.
It's because I owned it, like on VHS.
That means you've owned it. That means you've owned it since VHS.
I know, yeah. But it's just so, it's too overwatched, so I know every scene. Therefore, watching again is like just going, right, reading the Old Testament or something like that. Reading the Old Testament? Ooh. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Because you can't think of anything more dull.
Or just reading another calendar.
Like, reading.
Like, oh, this is the calendar from 2014. There's June. Night of the Living Dead. Love Night of the Living Dead.
Never seen Night of the Living Dead. I haven't seen a single film on your list.
I don't know. I just associate it with... I have no idea. I just really want you to watch Night of the Living Dead. It's because it's seminal, and it was the first zombie film ever made. And it's one of those classics that it feels like... None of those black and white like Hitchcock things like Psycho. To me, it feels like one of those. Night of the Living Dead is a class film. There's an amazing twist at the end.
So Night of the Living Dead's for you. Next on my list, I've gone with Goodfellas.
Yeah, that's a great shout, mate.
That film has perfect... pace.
Yes. Okay.
There's no fat on any of those scenes.
No.
They hang
you're
around
right.
the exact amount of time they should do.
Yes.
And there's even when they don't cut, I mean, obviously everyone talks about the table scene.
Yeah.
The introduction, which has been mirrored in so many different films.
Well, a really long take.
Well, it's a really long take, but it's constantly developing because it's taking us through the back of the club and stuff like that.
Through the kitchen.
The pace
the club.
Is just, I keep saying the word pace,
so good.
But that's what it is. It's a film that doesn't outstay its welcome and goes out as strong as it came in.
Definitely agree with that. And I actually had not Goodfellas but Casino on my list.
Not seen Casino.
Have you
you're
not?
Winning so far. Yeah,
fuck mate. Casino, yeah, it's not as good as Goodfellas, but a fucking great movie to watch. It's basically the same as Goodfellas. So everyone's a bit older. 12 Angry Men.
Yes, that is a good film. Part of my favorite, I don't think it's even a genre, but the one room films is one of my favorite sort of genres of all time, and something we're definitely going to be talking about. And 12 Angry Men is the basis for all of those films. It's the one that everyone wants to be in some respect.
It's that kind of Glengarry Glen Ross style theatre, like on stage, one room, real. Like, you've got, when you have such a focus on characters, when you can't leave a room and you've got to rely on what a character says or does for 90 odd minutes, then you've got to work so fucking hard at nailing the writing. And 12 Angry Men just does that so fucking well. But again, it's like one of those old films that I always associate watching kind of like during the daytime in an afternoon or whatever, like growing up.
Yeah, I can't imagine going to the cinema or making an event of that. Yeah,
exactly.
I agree what you're saying.
Yeah,
maybe you talk about how difficult it is to keep the focus and stuff like that. Maybe that's why I shouldn't have been trying for the last 4 years to write my first feature as one of those. That's why I've redrafted
it. You've got to become a master before you can learn to walk.
All right, so I'm going to finish off then, because this is the last one for me. The 90s classic, Stargate.
Stargate.
Watch it.
Actual
Watch
Stargate.
It. Actual Stargate. The original Kurt... I need to say Kurt Douglas.
Kurt Russell. Fucking hell.
Kurt what Russell and James Spader.
I can't picture... Yeah, I can picture James Spader, but I cannot picture Kurt Russell in it.
I mean, I
All
can't...
I can see is Snake fucking Plissken.
I can't believe that that film spawned the longest running science fiction series in history. It had something like 14, 15 seasons, the main one.
Stargate.
I know, I can't believe it either, because I can't... Here's this huge thing. I don't know a character. I can't quote a line.
No.
I don't know a... I saw one storyline briefly when I caught half an episode, but there's also been Stargate Atlantis, Stargate AIDS, Stargate...
SG-1.
Yeah, thank you. 90s classic Stargate. It's a nothing movie, but it's entertaining.
It does not deserve to spawn the longest running science fiction series of all time off the back of it, does
not
it?
Not at all.
I can't remember which ones I've said. It is Kiss Me Deadly. So film noir, therefore the basis of all neo-noir, Blade Runner, Altered Carbon, anything with a fucking PI in it. This is a classic film noir, genuine film noir, and it's the inspiration for Tarantino's Suitcase. It's worth watching because it's a fast-paced narrative. It's classic cinema, you know, 1940s like detective stuff, and it pushes out of its own genre. So you think of film noir and you think of like, okay, Private Dick, then there's the femme fatale and whatever, he's got to solve a case. But this contains this mystery box and no one knows what's in it, so that is a MacGuffin. But at the end, they shot two endings apparently, it's that kind of like when they open it, this mysterious force is in it. So it kind of moves from classic film noir into science fiction, because so
it becomes Indiana Jones and the Ark of the Covenant.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is nicked from Kiss Me Deadly. So I'd love you to watch that film, actually, just because I think it's classic cinema and I think you'll recognise so many other films or cinema tropes from it. And it's partly why we're called What's in the Box. I'm moving house right now, right? Which means I've got a load of DVDs that I need to bin. So how about this as a competition? We love iTunes reviews, don't we, Tristan? So exclusively this week, we're giving away an actual DVD. Whoever writes us a review will get a free DVD of my choice, seconded by Tristan, sent to your horrible house. Everyone that writes us an iTunes
everyone
review.
Everyone!
You can follow us on Twitter at Box Fresh Films and tell us what your favourite five films to watch are on a Sunday.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. Okay, goodbye everyone. That's our show.